Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Thriving Adoptees podcast. So today I'm delighted to be joined by Jay, all the way from LA. So Jay is the founder of Birth Parent Finder. Welcome to the show, Jay. Looking forward to chatting with you.
And thank you, Simon. I'm so glad to be here.
Yeah. So Birth Parent Finder. Why did you set that up?
Well, it's a nice story about my niece Maggie. I have been a private investigator for 40 years. This is my 40th year in the PI business, and I've located well over 10,000 people over the years. And sometimes I locate relatives, but this was in 2004. I was at my sister-in-law's house, and her stepdaughter Maggie was on her computer. And I said, "What are you doing?" She goes, "I'm looking for my birth mother." And I said, "Wait a minute, let me take over. You're doing this all wrong." So I had some information. I used my database and I said, "Your birth mother, this is your birth mother on the East Coast," because she used to live in Compton, California. And she had not a common first name, but a very common last name. And I said, "This is your birth mother. This is her phone number." So fast forward about a year, she had a reunion with her mother's side of the family in Los Angeles. And she goes to me, she goes, "Well, why don't you just open a separate company to locate birth parents?" So simple enough. About a year later, I opened up birthparentfinder.com, and the rest is history.
Fantastic. I love it. I love that origin story. So what I would love to explore with you today is really, I guess, the two parts, right? So that, you know, I was thinking as I was driving along, what are we going to talk to Jay about? And I was thinking about the emotional side, right? So what you've seen that helps adoptees kind of navigate the emotions of this stuff, shall we say, as easily as they can, and then some of the practical stuff as well. But I want to make it, I don't know if I've shared this part of my little story on the podcast, but I was in a therapist's chair about 6 years ago, and she said something to me about tracing my birth mum, and the idea of my birth mum being outside of the door of the therapist's room popped into my head. And I, when this came into my head, it was a real visceral moment. So I flushed with fear, like really, like a very fast, dark, deep, foreboding fear. That grabbed me. And then the next thing that grabbed me was anger about my fear. And in that moment, I decided I'm not going to let this fear stop me searching. So it was a really pivotal moment when I talk about the story. The metaphor that comes to my mind is always it's the Marines, right? So the United States Marine Corps, your elite unit. They apparently run towards the fire. If they hear the sound of gunfire, they run towards it, and they reckon that the rest of the US military runs away from it. So what I did in that moment, I decided I was gonna face this fear of a potential second rejection, it could be termed, and I was gonna run straight into that fear, because I wasn't going to do anything. I'm not really that sort. I'm a lover, not a fighter, right? So I'm not this sort of macho guy that does this stuff. But in that moment, that was the thing that came into my mind. So it can clearly be a very emotional time, and I had a very emotional stimulus too that kind of rebooted my search. So that's a long prelim to asking you a simple question. So what have you What have you learned about how adoptees navigate this search as painlessly as possible?
Well, everyone has a different story. Everyone. And we've worked on thousands of cases over the years. And I always tell people, the ones they always ask me, which ones do you remember the most? And the most I remember are the ones that don't work out well because the family doesn't want to reach out. Those are the ones that stick with me because my job is to facilitate conversation, possibly reunion. Not everyone wants a reunion. And I could talk about some specific cases. There are so many, but like I said, the ones that stand out the most are the ones that don't go well. And you look at the adopted parents, how they raise their adoptees. And that is the key to the mental well-being of the adoptee. And we know that. I work with a therapist. She sometimes helps some of our clients. And it's really, and I always say, why are you so angry with your birth mother or your birth father? Sometimes the birth father doesn't know about you. Don't blame him. He could be a one night stand. It could be he never knew. And the birth mother obviously did what's best for you. She gave birth to you. She did not have to give birth to you, but she gave birth to you and put you in the best possible hands. And that's what we try to tell people. Not every situation works out, but for the most part, probably 90% or more of my clients are well-adjusted, have great relationships with their adopted family. But since we have so many cases, that 10% didn't have a good upbringing.
Yeah. Presumably you take on both. You take on the ones that are the people that are less able. Less able. They're less stable, perhaps. You know, they're feeling a little bit like, clearly in that moment, I was pretty unstable in that moment. But then the peace returned. There was no real anger before then. There was peace after it. But do you sometimes try and dissuade the people who you feel it aren't, you know, stable enough to handle the potential rejection? Or it's a difficult thing, I would guess.
But yeah, that's very true, because we don't take every single case. If somebody comes to us and says, hey, I am angry at my birth mother for putting me up for adoption, and I want to call her out, I want to knock on her door, say, no, we're not taking that case. But if you're serious about finding your family and getting medical history information, we'll take the case, but we won't give confidential information like your mother's address or phone number to you because of that volatile situation. We want to give you, some people think it sounds corny, but we really want to either give you closure or peace of mind. And I think those two things are important, closure or peace of mind. There's other things people want out of this, but those are the two main things.
Yeah. That's an interesting one. I'm just going to use it because I've never heard about that before. You know, this idea that, you know, you might find the details that are needed for the medical history, but you might leave the actual information, have that as a separate thing. So I bet that's never really occurred to anybody. It wouldn't never occur to me. Okay, I don't want a reunion, but I want to know the medical stuff in case that's got an important thing for significance for me. So I'm just flagging that in case that's of interest, just to sow that idea if it's never landed in anybody else's, the listener's head, because it's never landed to me. You talked about closure and peace of mind. And for me, we're kind of in the Western world, we're brought up to look for the happiness is and I'll be happy when it's, you know, I'll be happy when, so in society, you know, I'll be happy when When you're a kid, when you, you know, when you're at college, I'll be happy. When you're at high school, I'll be happy. When I've landed in my place in college, when you're in college, I'll be happy. When I've got my first job, when you've got your first job, I'll be happy. When I've got my first house, when I've got my money, getting my next promotion, when I get my mortgage paid off, and it goes through life, I'll be happy. When, you know, like if we hit 40s and we're not doing a job that we like doing, you clearly love doing yours, but you know, we get to this, I'll be happy when I'm retired. I'll be happy when happiness seems just to be around a corner. And that, again, this is a long intro to a question, you know, that what I sometimes felt in for myself, and sometimes I hear it in other adoptees, is I'll be happy when I find my birth parent, when I have closure. To what extent does the closure bring the peace of mind and the clarity? To what extent does that help your clients when there's been a successful search?
Well, it's interesting you say that, because happiness and closure and peace of mind are separate, because that doesn't necessarily give you happiness. And I always tell my clients, if you want a happy outcome of this, there's no guarantee. It might not go well, but you're going to get answers. Answers is the key thing. Yeah. Give them answers. And happiness, you know, like I said, sometimes there is happiness, sometimes there's not. It really depends on the circumstances. And a lot of times we facilitate these reunions. They go beautifully. Sometimes we do them in the media. We share it on that little show we're on in Los Angeles. And these are great, great stories. We don't share the ones that aren't great. I have shared some that don't go well, just to show them that this is how a client gets closure. And even though she didn't meet her birth father, she got what she wanted.
Yeah. So what do you see in, what do you hear later on in terms of let me take a step back. Actually, because there's something that you mentioned that prompted something I've heard from somebody else. So what I've heard from other people is the ideal situation is we have no expectations, right? So we're expecting absolutely nothing from the search. We're not expecting whether it's going to work out. We're not expecting whether it's going to lead to a happy reunion. We can kind of separate our peace of mind from the outcome of the search and reunion. Now, that sounds like, as two guys just talking, that sounds like a brilliant idea, you know, logical, rational, but these are clearly highly emotional things. So, it was for me, and I'm sure it is for most. So what can you say about this expectations thing? What kind of extra things, what extra flesh can you put on this bone, the bones of this argument that I've set out?
So with my company, there are three things we do. We find out who your birth family is. Whether you're looking for a sister, brother, parents, we find out who they are. If they're alive, we try to get their contact information or the next of kin. And then we reach out to them on your behalf. That's what we do. Those are the expectations from me and my company. No guaranteed outcome as far as how that's going to go, but you're going to get information. That's what you wanted. You don't know who your family is. Your birth family, that is. Your family is your adopted family. That is the people that raised you. And like I said, most of my cases are people that have a good life, an adjusted life, where they just want to know, where do I come from? What does my birth mother look like? Do I have any siblings out there? Like I said, if they're not well adjusted, I will probably not take their case.
Yeah. Okay. And what sort of guidance do you share before you start that? What sort of guidance do you provide or what, how would you summarize the advice, the guidance, the prelim stuff before you start the search?
So they go through a vetting process with our company. The first person they talk to is our investigative consultant, Linda, and she talks to them, see if they're in the right place, and looks at the form they fill out. If they took a DNA test, how is it possible to solve their case? We have a genealogist, a couple of genealogists on our team that are very, very good, very well known, actually. And they look at the DNA and say, yeah, we could solve this case. And then I take over. This is once they pay our fee. Realistically, it's not that much money compared to other companies. It really isn't for what we do. And some of these cases are very difficult and everyone is charged a flat rate. And once in a while, we do take pro bono case. I mean, I took two pro bonos last week just because I felt like it. And I really felt for these people, and there were extenuating circumstances, and I solved both of them, and they are ecstatic. They've been looking for 30 years for their family. So getting back to I talk to them. I make sure, I double check to make sure they're in the right place. And I tell them, like I told you, don't expect a perfect outcome from this. And I always ask them, how was your relationship with your adopted parents? Do your adopted parents know about this? And that's important to me, because when I reach out to the birth family, they always ask me those same questions. Does this person have a good life? Do their adopted parents know about this? What do they do for a living? Are they married? And they always ask, do they have children? Because you know what? The birth mother wants to know if she has grandkids. Yeah, and a lot of times the birth mother never had other kids and never had grandkids. And sometimes that just makes her just feel so overwhelmed in a good way.
Yeah. Yeah. Interestingly, when I got to the end of my my search, I found, unfortunately, that my birth mother had died before. A long time before I started the search, and she hadn't had any. She got married a couple of years after she'd given birth to me, not to my bio father, to another guy. It didn't last long. She didn't have any kids with him. She never got married again. And you know, this is I'm going back to. So she must have got married sort of late 60s, divorced early 70s, and then and died 30 years later on her own. She hadn't actually had any kids of herself, so I can of her own. So no grandkids. So I can see that. See, when I did my search, I didn't tell my mum and dad that I was doing it. I think that's a common theme. That's a common theme.
And let me ask you, how would that have made them feel if you told them?
It would have made them feel very put out, I think. My mother's attitude to this has changed recently, but and I don't know what caused that change. Do most of your clients, are they researching without, or are they instigating this search, you know, hiring you without their parents knowing? Or,
well, in some cases their parents are deceased, and in other cases there's very few that don't tell their adopted parents. Most of them have pretty good relationships, but I also get hired by birth mothers or fathers looking for kids out there. That's maybe 20% of the search. And those are interesting, because we find out later on that they've been looking, both sides have been looking for each other.
Yeah. It's a tricky one to ask you, but what do you say to your clients, assuming, and I'm talking here, you know, the clients that are adoptees, about what they share with their adoptive parents, their mum and dad, about this? What do you say to them? Do you stick out of that? Do you stay out of that conversation?
Oh, no, I sometimes get involved because I've been doing this for so long. I know how to talk to people and I know how to explain to the adopted mother what's going on. But in a lot of times, though, the adopted parents are part of the search. Sometimes they even hire me to find their kids' birth parents
Oh,
because
wow.
there's extenuating circumstances regarding mental health issues. A lot of times it's these cases, sometimes they're not identifying information, does not have medical history information. Medical history information is the number one thing, because back in the 1960s and 1970s, a lot of times that was not provided by the state, the adoption agency. Now it's law. You have to provide that. And most adoptions now are open. But back in those days, they were closed. You had no information. And now with DNA, so many of our cases are solved with DNA. And people just don't understand. Well, how could you solve a case with DNA when the birth mother or birth father don't take a test? Doesn't matter, because any one of their first, second, or third cousins takes a test, we can probably figure out who the birth parents are.
Yeah. So it might be. I'm just thinking aloud about the adoptee that's listening to this, and what I would do if I was concerned. You could almost, as a tactic, start off with the, well, I want to find the medical stuff. And a warm, see how the land of, see how the land lies, and then progress to the full thing. It and as I come up with that, it seems like slightly duplicious. Is that the word?
Well, that's always what I lead with. That's the first thing I open my conversation with. I usually call them. I don't usually send them a letter. Calling them, I want that direct contact. And I always lead with this: your adopted child, your child, your birth child never received medical history information. That's the ultimate goal. But it would be nice if you're interested in talking to him or her and maybe have a reunion. Sounds corny, but you know what? There's a lot of times eventually they want to meet up, and they usually go well. Sometimes they don't go well after they meet up, but like I said, the opening line is medical history information. You're right. That is the opening line.
That's the opening line with the birth parent. Sorry, I wasn't clear. What I was suggesting is that that's what the adoptee uses when they're talking to their parent, saying that they want to find this stuff
Oh, you
out.
mean their adopted parents? Yeah, that's usually the most important thing, because the adopt they if they especially if they have kids, a lot of times we get hired by people who, their kids are maybe 10, 12, 13 years old. They just become teenagers and going to get to the doctor more often, and they don't have their family's health history. So that is a good reason to tell your adopted parents, hey, look, I need to look for my birth parents now. Now's the time. And usually they don't question that. However, there's a however. If you're looking for a birth father of a situation where there was a sexual assault, those are really tough. Those are horrible. And especially in a state where the statute of limitations hasn't expired. And we had one of those, and we just weren't sure how to handle it. And we decided, with the cooperation of the client, that it was not a good idea to reach out to someone who obviously didn't know he had a child. He was, I don't like to use the term, he was a rapist. And technically, whatever, I don't remember the state, but in certain states, those statute of limitations don't expire. So what we can do is use the DNA, find a close relative, and say, hey, we think you're, based on DNA, you're a close relative. We don't really want to talk to the birth father, but we need medical history information. We don't tell them the circumstances. So we will get medical history information without going into details of the circumstances of the birth. That's a real tricky thing, and we do that.
Yeah. Talking about tricky things then, do you often end up collaborating with this therapist to smooth the process along?
I actually just refer them directly to her, and she has her own business. She's great. She's based in Los Angeles, and she worked with one of my clients. I'll tell you this story quickly. this was a case where, and it's on my social media. Most of these stories that the clients allow me to tell, they're on my social media at Birth Parent Finder. And this is a woman in 2001 gave birth to twins. She was had trouble getting pregnant. She did not expect to have twins. And then when she found out, it was very difficult for her because she could not raise twins due to financial circumstances. Her husband worked four jobs, and she knew she couldn't get the support of her family for that. So she decided one of the twins would be put up for adoption. Okay. But she never told her mother, her best friend, or her daughter that she kept that she was a twin. But the family who adopted the little girl, they told from the time she was old enough to understand, they told their daughter that she had a twin sister and only lived an hour and a half from her. And they had all the information, but they made a promise that they wouldn't say anything or reach out until she's 18. So here's where I come along. I'm the person that was going to facilitate this. And the birth mother was just so scared that she'd be vilified by her friends and the press. And I said, don't worry, I will handle this the right way. So we referred her to the therapist. They spoke. They said, don't worry, you're a good person. And you wouldn't, neither one of these girls would have been able to live the life they have today if they weren't separated. They were both avid horse riders. One was a champion rider, but they only lived an hour and a half apart. So I facilitated this reunion, and nobody vilified the birth mother, her best friend, her mother, her daughter. And you can watch these stories. They're on our Instagram page from a year and a half ago. But it went so well. But here's the problem. Here's the problem. This is the adopted parents who are instilling in their daughter's head that the birth mother is a bad person. She didn't want you. She rejected you. She kept the one she wanted. She purposely had a C-section at 35 weeks so no one knows she's pregnant. No one. And she instilled in her daughter's head that the birth mother was not a good person. Well, you don't want to do that. You never, ever want. And this is what the therapist said. We did a mini documentary on this. I did a sizzle reel. It's on social media. We tried to get a full documentary, but we can't do that unless we get the cooperation from the adoptee. So fast forward, everything went so well that the adoptee's parents were so angry that it went so well. They kept telling her over and over again that the birth mother is a bad person. She lied to you. She told you she had no money. But what I did was, and they all fell apart. And they haven't talked to each other since. So what I did was I flew out to Indiana with the cameraman, and we basically told the birth mother story. We got the truth. Was the birth mother lying about what happened? So I tracked down the OBGYN, got a statement from him filmed that no, she was breached. There was no purposely done C-section. She was breached. I found out that the birth mother didn't have a lot of money, that she didn't have the support of her family, and that she didn't know which daughter to put up for adoption. She left it up to the doctors in the hospital, and she did what she thought was the right thing. Now, you may not think she did the right thing, but you know what? The bottom line is the adoptee has had a great life, and I've followed her. She's had a great life, but what's missing from the adoptee's life is her twin sister more than anything. That's what's missing. She has another sister that was adopted, and I found her family, what's missing from her life is that relationship with the twin sister, not the birth mother. She cares nothing about the birth mother because the birth mother in her mind rejected her. And that's what most of these adoptees are struggling with, that she was, and this is a different case because there were twins, and this is crazy. But you know, I don't pass judgment. I work with the birth mother. I'm very, very close with her daughter. I'm very close with her husband, and I'm very close with her. And we've established this relationship. And I'm hoping that one day, the adopted twin will come around and accept her birth family. And they did what they thought she did, what she thought was right. And I'm not going to question her for it. Like I said, you may think she did the wrong thing. Where would those girls be today? We don't know. We don't know. No. So that's the story about
it. It really goes back to your point about closure here, Jay, because, you know, we don't know what we don't know. We don't know what we're going to find out. You know, the instigation of me being concerned about, you know, well. So when I was, have you seen this story about me finding out that my teddy bear was from a birth mother?
I don't know your story.
Yeah, okay. So when I'm 55, right? At 40, I found out that my teddy bear. I knew that I was adopted forever. I was told so young. I don't ever remember not knowing, and didn't have any issue. Adoption, it wasn't a big thing in my life. It wasn't a significant, and wasn't an issue. At 40, I found out that my teddy bear that I'd had since I was a kid was from my birth mother. And my first reaction to that was one of curiosity. But a couple of months later, I was sharing the story with somebody, and I had this explosion of anger towards my birth mother. And the fact that she didn't love me enough to keep me is the essence of what I said. And I'd never had those feelings for her before, right? I'd never really given her much thought. I'd achieved a modicum of business success, and that had made me happy. And I thought that maybe adoption screwed me up in some way. So that sent me off on a journey that eventually led me to doing what I'm doing today. But along the way, when I got my documents from my birth, when I got my adoption file, there was a letter to the agency about the teddy bear and the fact that she'd wanted to buy me this teddy bear. Yeah, she hadn't been able to get it because on the way to the adoption agency to hand me over, for want of a better word, the traffic had been really bad, and she hadn't been able to stop off at the store. So she was asking the permission of the adoption agency. Would they ask my mum and dad's permission, and would this teddy bear go along the line? And I received that. So that was about. When I found that, so the start of the story was the teddy bear explosion when I was 40. The end of that chapter was 6 years ago when I found out that she'd wanted to buy me this teddy bear. And the letters, although I found out that she died at a later stage, the letters in the adoption file showed me how much she loved me, and how this teddy bear, rather than being a consolation prize, as I'd seen it when I was angry at this, you know, when I was 40, 15 years ago, it was a symbol of her love. And, you know, like as I read those letters, the tears just cascaded down my face as I felt a connection to her, although she died. You know, she,
right. That's totally understandable because she obviously struggled. She struggled with putting you up for adoption, and she was a person that truly cared.
Yeah. And I wouldn't have known that if I hadn't done the search. You know, if I hadn't had, I don't know if I'm getting the timeline all right here, whether I'm explaining it, but the meltdown in the therapist chair was the spur to restarting the search. And the end of the search ended in this documentation, and that was closure for me. Although I found out later that she died, the closure wasn't a logical thing. It was an emotional release when I realized the extent to which I was wrong about her not loving.
So is there a silver lining to your story?
That was the silver lining. I clearly didn't explain it properly enough. That was the silver lining in terms of my own stuff. I guess another silver lining is that all this led to this. All that led to this.
Right, that is the silver lining in your case.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if you have siblings that you found or any other birth family.
No, she didn't have any other kids. after me. She hadn't had any kids before me. I did write to a guy who I think is my birth father. He didn't come back to me, but it was really never about him. You know, I put myself in, you know, I could put myself in his shoes, right? So what would have happened if, you know, if I'd got a girl pregnant, what would I have done? He actually, I found out the story with the files. He just like didn't want anything to do with the pregnancy, and he was out of that.
So what's interesting, I'll interrupt you if you don't mind. What's interesting is that we've had many cases like that where the birth father wanted nothing to do with it, but the client persisted that we reach out to his family, his kids, and that's a tough one. We actually do research on the kids, what their life is like, and then we reach out to them. Let's say the birth father's deceased. We reach out to them, and they get angry that they never knew, because they said, in the back of their minds, they knew there was somebody else out there, and they wish they would have known all this time, and that was all lost time. Yeah, so we never overlook that someone isn't looking for somebody. We just really keep trying to find that next person.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I'm pretty sure that this guy is my bio father. He didn't respond back, and I thought, do I? You know, he still lives in so he still lives in Liverpool. So I was adopted from Liverpool, from an agency in Liverpool, or a council, to use the exact words, because adoption here in the UK is completely different to the state.
Right, and you have nothing to lose if at some point you wanted to reach out to him or his family. You have zero to lose. There's nothing.
Yeah.
And that's the thing we tell people. You at this point, you're in your early 50s. You have nothing to lose.
I think one of the things that came into my head was actually upsetting his wife, actually. Do you know what I mean? It's strange how we go, but yeah, I take your point. Nothing to lose. I think I've got this. I came up with this idea about 18 months or so ago, Jay, and I call it the no-brainer. Right. So I only do no-brainers because I spend a lot of time thinking about stuff. As you maybe can tell, I'm a deep thinker. So you know, I think about stuff, and I think, well, so. Shall I? Shan't I? Right, and essentially the solution is, if it's a no brainer, I do it. If it's not a no brainer, then I don't do it. So, like you sent me an email, said, "Can I come on the show?" Absolute no brainer. I want to hear what Jay's got to say about the emotion and the emotional side, the practical side. What this all stands up with, that's a no-brainer, right? But am I bothered about my birth dad? Do I want to? I would have done. I'm a tenacious guy. If I'm gonna do something, I kind of go out and do it, and I stick with it. And I'm sometimes too tenacious, right? I sometimes stick with it. Often I stick with things. I flog dead horses. So it's an interesting one. I will give it some thought. Do I want to restart it? Maybe I'll have that moment.
And with my company, we actually have a form letter. If we don't reach out by phone, we have a form letter that we use that's very effective. Sometimes we've actually, let me tell you this story real quick. Couldn't get a hold of a birth mother. It was really difficult getting a hold of her. So she didn't live too far from me. So I drove over to her house with the form letter, rang the doorbell. And she answered, and I handed her the letter, explained who I was, and we spoke for a couple minutes. She said, "Thank you very much. I'll get back to you." The next day, I get a phone call from her, and she says, "You're not going to believe this. You rang the Ring camera, and the Ring doorbell is connected to my kids. My kids heard our entire conversation, but I never told them that I had a daughter years ago." And how do you like, and by the way, that's happened twice in my career. It's like, so I learned, you know what, just don't say anything if you ring a Ring doorbell. But you know what, I saved her the hassle of having to tell her kids that she had a child before them, but they were fine with it. It's just, the odds on something that happened, it's like, that was just so strange. But all in all, it worked out well. My client got closure. She was actually able to meet her whole family, and it all just worked out very well in that case.
Yeah. The idea of the idea of finding a half brother or sister has a little bit more appeal than that, than finding him. You know, it's something that kind of piques my interest. So.
Right, but a DNA test is usually very effective for that. And if, like I said, if someone in your family takes a DNA test, it'll connect you.
Yeah. I don't know to the extent to what extent the our DNA is as prevalent, usage of DNA, and therefore accuracy of it as prevalent in the UK versus the US. I'm not sure about that.
But you can take an ancestry DNA test.
Okay, so tell me more.
Ancestry DNA, the company?
Yeah.
You can take a test with them and it'll connect you to birth relatives on either side. You haven't done that?
No, I haven't done that.
I would recommend doing that. Ancestry, there's 23andMe, there's MyHeritage. Most people test with Ancestry. MyHeritage is really good for Europe, but most people do test with Ancestry. I would try that one first. To just go to ancestry.com. They're actually having a sale right now until September 4th, a Labor Day, a U.S. Labor Day sale. But I think that you can do that worldwide. It's like $59. But I got to tell you, you might be surprised what you see there.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, this is going to go out next month. So the discount won't be valid anymore. But
well, they always have sales, and it's $99, but it's money well spent.
Yeah. It's interesting. I'll definitely mull it over, but it's not something that grabs me, either search or DNA. What I was getting at, Jay, is that I felt that there wouldn't be as many. I may be showing my ignorance here because I don't know a lot about this stuff. Right? Well, no, absolutely zero. I wouldn't be sure whether to what extent, and this is what I was trying to say before, I don't think that the UK, as large a proportion of the UK population have done DNA tests as the American population. That's nothing, but I'm getting a sense from you that doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter at all. A lot of times people travel all over the world, they move. You could have a second or third cousin that actually came to the US. And through that relative, we possibly can track down who your birth father is or was.
Yeah.
Just never know. It's a gamble, but it's I think it's worth it.
Yeah. But you said one of them's quite good for Europe.
23andMe is okay for it's good for medical history, genetics. But I think MyHeritage is a good one for Europe. Eastern European, they're based in Israel, but they're really good for European testing. But I still would take an ancestry.com test. You can take more than one and then have it uploaded to a site called GEDmatch. But I would just start with ancestry.com. You never know.
Yeah. Okay. Are there any other pointers that you can give to people on the starting off the search, like these practical things that you mentioned?
Well, I don't know if your audience is mostly UK or US.
It's mostly US, actually. It's mostly
okay,
US.
So we always tell people, why are you searching for your birth parents? That's the question we ask. What is your number one reason? That is the key. If it's to find out medical history, find out who you look like, who your family is, that's fine. So the first thing I would do is, if you have no information at all, no information, take an ancestry DNA test. Start with that company. And then we'll look at your results. We don't charge anything at all to analyze your DNA results. And honestly, if you wouldn't even have to hire us if you see a half sibling there, you just reach out to them. But sometimes people hire us, even if there is a half sibling, even if their parents listed, and sometimes that happens, they hire us to be the liaison between the parties because they feel awkward to reach out. And that's the thing. And we've had situations where someone says, hey, years ago, I found my birth mother and I knocked on her door with flowers and she passed out. We know, yeah, and that happens. And it's like, oh no, you don't want to do that. That's just traumatic. She goes, yeah, that was 20 years ago. Now I want to reach out again. And it's like, oh, it's just, and then taking that case, it's very difficult for us, but we do take those cases. And I had one a couple months ago that happened. And I reached out to the birth mother and said, look, we know that our client reached out to you years ago, but and now that your family is all on DNA, they're all right there. This is what she wants. And the birth mother helped me out. And she goes, I'll give you this information. Please don't ever call me again. She gave me the information that my client wanted. I think my client really wanted to meet her birth mother. We knew that wasn't going to happen. We tried, but we gave her a picture of her, told her that her birth mother has kids that the kids never knew, by the way. But if those kids take DNA tests at some point, they'll know they have a half sibling. And we tell the birth mother, said, you know what? If your kids or grandkids take a DNA test and they see this relative on there and they see how closely that person's related, they're going to come to you and ask you questions. So you need to be prepared. And then when that happens, sometimes a week later, I get a phone call from the birth mother and says, okay, you can help. We'll do something. And that's where I come in. I am used to doing these things.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Don't do, the whole point is don't do this on your own if it could be complicated.
Yeah. Okay. So as always, listeners, there's I always put a bio of the guest and links to their website and their socials in the show notes. So you can check out what Jay's doing, maybe check out some of the videos and the stories that he's been talking about. So that's all going to be there. Is there anything else that you'd like to share? Any question that I've not asked that you'd like to answer?
No, I just want to let people know that you don't necessarily have to hire a company like us. But if you're uncertain and you're not used to doing this type of search, then you could either use a company like us. You can. And I always tell people, try not to use a search angel because, and I know people like using search angels, but they're not experts in research. I have information the public doesn't have access to. And I've located thousands of people. I'm recognized around the country. Our company is award-winning. And I would suggest using a company like ours if you can afford it. And like I said, sometimes we take pro bono cases and we do run specials and contests during the year for people to get pro bono searches. And we just really want to help as many people as we can.
Okay. You're a star, Joe. Thank you very much for coming on. I really appreciate it. Thanks, listeners. And we will speak to you again very soon. Cheers. Bye-bye.